You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, and available on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, here with you all on this Friday, final podcast of the week, and the Pelicans have two games coming up this weekend, a back-to-back where they take on the Jazz before traveling to Portland to take on the Trailblazers. I'm going to preview both of those games here for you. I think these are two very interesting teams, so I want to kind of give you a rundown on them, let you know what to maybe expect, how these teams play, and what the Pelicans can do to remain competitive in these. And then finally, going to have a quick interview talking about Drew Holiday with one of the Locked On Pelicans writers, Alex Ferrari, who right there now has an article up on the site. So check it out over at LockedOnPelicans.com, and let's just dive right on into everything. So the Utah Jazz are an interesting team for a number of reasons, but looking at the standings, they're in the fight for that 7-8-9 kind of spot. Right now, they're 10-11. They played last night against the Clippers, and by the time I recorded this, the game hadn't ended, so I don't have a result on that. So they're either going to be at 500 or two games below 500. And certainly this Jazz team, once they suffered the Rudy Gobert injury with him being out for around 2 months or so, was maybe expected to kind of decline. But they've really changed their makeup and are looking at being 4-4 or, you know, potentially 5-4 since his injury, and have kind of changed their identity in a weird way. Obviously, everyone knows the Jazz are a very good defensive team. They're coached very well by Quinn Snyder. But since the injury, they actually have the third best offensive rating, and they kind of want to spread you out and play small, like a slow version style of the Warriors almost. And since the injury, they've been running Derek Favors at center, and he's been absolutely beasting against slower and, you know, bigger centers with less lateral movement that aren't able to defend his quick moves. And this could present a problem for the Pelicans tonight as they take on the Jazz in Utah, which is never an easy place to play. So the situation potentially here is if he gets matched up on Cousins, I don't think Cousins has the lateral movement to really kind of stop him from doing what they want to do. And if he's there against Anthony Davis, I think that's basically the Pelicans' best matchup with it to try and neutralize him. But he has been playing incredibly well and has just been, like I said, destroying some of these guys. However, they haven't really gone up against a front court like the New Orleans Pelicans. So that can really help. You got to try and neutralize Derek Favors a little bit because he made Nikola Jokic the other night just look silly when the Jazz came back and absolutely destroyed Denver. And certainly you don't want to see that happen to the Pelicans here. This is a team that, again, wants to spread you out, pass the ball around, and they do that to generate a lot of good three-point shooting. Right now in the league, let me pull the numbers up as I just closed that tab out by accident. They're eighth best when it comes to three-point shooting percentage, and they also take the 10th most three-point attempts. So certainly, it's been generated by this ball movement, kind of creating open looks. A little bit of, like I said, what the Warriors want to do, what the Pelicans want to do, and they're going out and being able to do it. So they have been making threes at an incredibly high rate since this injury. This Jazz team also worries me a little bit, and again, playing on the road there is never easy, but we still need to see the Pelicans perform at a high level against top-tier competition. Again, they have the win over the Spurs, a blowout against them, which is phenomenal, and I still think that's a very good Spurs team, especially because they were at 11-6 at the time, even without Kawhi Leonard. And OKC has enough talent that you kind of want to respect them and think they're good too. But other than that, the Pelicans haven't played well against top competition. So that's kind of the issue. And this Jazz team reminds me a little bit in makeup to that Minnesota team is in they've got a number of guys who can go out there and score. Gobert's out. He was one of their leading scorers. But you still have Rodney Hood, who's averaging almost 18 points a game. Rookie Donovan Mitchell's getting close to 15. Derek Favors is only averaging 13 on the season, but recently you've seen that number rise. Ricky Rubio is still Ricky Rubio in dishing out assists, but he's been much more of a scorer this year, and he's also shooting, for him, much better from three-point range, nearing 30%, though it's dipped over the past couple of games. It was higher before that. Joe Ingles has been a pretty good starter this year for the Utah Jazz. He's averaging just 10 points, but my goodness, this dude has one of the better pump fakes in the league and uses that to kind of get open, create more shots, and then uses that to kind of pass the ball around. He's averaging almost 4 assists per game. He's also on my fantasy team, along with Rubio, too, oddly. Two Jazz players, which is a bit weird for a team that's not known for a ton of offense. And then in replacing Rudy Gobert, they've got kind of two players combining to be one really good one in Thabo Sefolosha, Jonas Jerebko. And again, they've got a lot of guys that can score, and the Pelicans are going to need to find a way, potentially, once the starters get a little bit tired, to get some scoring out of their bench unit. As I talked about on the podcast yesterday, they don't have one of the better scoring benches in the league. This is a team that you're going to have to get kind of in a shootout with, and maybe with their slow style of play is going to neutralize some of the offense that the starters bring to the table. On the season, the Jazz rank, where is it? As I don't have any of my stats here. They're 27th out of 30 when it comes to pace. So this is a team that isn't going to get out there and run against you. They're going to kind of grind it down, play very smart, efficient offense, and you can't have very many empty trips. Turnovers, things like that are going to be potentially an issue, and one of the reasons why the Pelicans might not lose this game. But as I said, the Jazz haven't really played a front court, no team really has, like the Pelicans so far this year. And you have to think that Davis is enough to kind of cancel out Derek Favors. They have the advantage there. The Pelicans are then going to kind of go inside and score that way. And without Rudy Gobert, who always neutralized one of Davis and or Cousins, isn't going to be able to keep up. I think the Pelicans can win this one. Whether they go out, execute, and avoid the mistakes that, you know, they're kind of prone to doing, we'll wait to see. But I think this could potentially be kind of one of those matchups where the Pelicans get a win and it builds a lot of confidence, showing they can kind of compete with some of these better teams in the Western Conference. Don't forget, coming up later in Locked On Pelicans, I'm going to have Alex Harari of LockedOnPelicans.com coming on. He's got a very in-depth article and post up there with a lot of video for you to watch on how Drew Holiday has been playing much better, how he's been scoring. He's going to come on the pod and break it down for us in a little bit more. So on the second night of a back-to-back, the Pelicans also have a very tough matchup against the Portland Trail Blazers. And I should mention from the previous segment, the Jazz, when they do play the Pelicans, will be on the second night of a back-to-back as well. And hopefully the Clippers wear them out a little bit. But as we saw against Minnesota, that didn't matter a whole lot. So you've got to wonder if that rest thing, as Alvin Gentry says, is a little bit overrated and you shouldn't read too much into it. But the Pelicans will be on the second night of a back-to-back traveling up to Portland, which is a very, very tough place to play. If you recall, these two teams played earlier in the year. Portland won 103-93, and that was the game where Anthony Davis left after just playing 5 minutes in the game. And despite that, and again, this is where we saw maybe a different mental makeup for the Pelicans this season, where they started to come back and get back into the game. And, you know, they kind of got really close. They kept it up there, especially in that second quarter behind DeMarcus Cousins, who put up 39 points and 13 rebounds on the night while only shooting 3 of 10 from 3. It shows you he was looking to go inside. And that's how you beat this Blazers team. If you watch this Blazers team, you would think, or just knowing about them, it's all offense, no defense. But I'm going to surprise you here by letting you know they actually have the second best defensive rating in the NBA on the season. Only the Boston Celtics have a better one so far this year, and it's by exactly 1 point per 100 possessions. So they're very, very close. This Portland team is kind of an inversion of what they've been over the past couple of years. Shockingly good on defense and just okay offensively. And I think they're a better offensive team than they've been playing, though. Now, defensively, they do a few things which makes them so efficient. they run you off the three-point line right away. They're very good at closing out, kind of the opposite of what the Pelicans do. Teams shoot just 33.1% from deep against them. They're also taking just 25 three-pointers a game. Both of those rank in the top five, and they allow the fewest makes, obviously, with just 8.3. Your three-point shooting isn't going to beat them. They also take away the rim kind of well. And what I mean from that is teams get a lot of shots at the rim against them, but the combination of Jusuf Nurkić and Ed Davis are making it so that teams aren't shooting well in the restricted area. I think it's like second or third worst, and they're making something like under 40% at the rim or under 3 feet, which is an incredibly, incredibly low number. That said, again, they haven't really played a front court like the Pelicans. And when you look back at that game against Portland from early on in the season, you know, Cousins really did most of his damage down low, kind of banging in the paint. Portland allows a lot of shots there. It's one of the fifth highest amounts in the league. So the Pelicans are going to be able to get to the rim. This plays to their advantage with the starters. Davis and Cousins are going to get theirs and feast at the rim. Jrue Holiday should be able to drive and get into the paint and try and score that way. You've got Rondo kind of doing his Rondo thing of driving and dishing and penetration, which is a problem that Portland has defending. It's the rest of the team is where I worry a little bit. Etuan Moore is going to need to try and get into the lane and hit that floater. Tony Allen can get to the rim, but he plays limited minutes, and they're going to mainly have him out there defensively to harass that terrifying backcourt of CJ McCollum along with Jrue Holiday. Darius Miller is a three-point shooter. I don't know if they run him off the line, if he's going to be as effective as he could be in this game. Same thing with Ian Clark, whose minutes have been decreasing significantly recently, but he's more of a gunner and a shooter type player. So that bench matchup, and after the starters, and this is where maybe not having a third big really hurts you, I wonder if the Pelicans are going to be able to score effectively. And as we've seen, they struggle with that this year. Portland on the season, though, does play with kind of a slow-ish pace. They're in the bottom third when it comes to that stat, so it's not like the Pelicans are going to have tons and tons of possessions here, so you need to try and kind of maximize each one that you're going to get. The players that are on the team currently outside of the starters, I worry about that, but again, you got to play the game. That's what we're here to do. We're certainly going to find out, and hopefully they can get it done. The other thing that Portland does very well, which could potentially hurt the Pelicans, is they force a lot of deflections. This can be dangerous with the Pelicans passing the ball around the horn a lot, and more passes, you have potential for more deflections. However, at the same time, just take the passes and come with it. I think this is going to be a close game. We saw in the first matchup of the two teams this year that the Pelicans really can get back into this with both bigs pounding the ball inside, particularly if it's the Davis that we saw from the other night where he had 17 points before the ejection because he was aggressive and attacking. I think the Pelicans can take this one. I actually kind of feel better about this game than I do about the Jazz game because the Portland defense is just very obviously, or it's just very obvious where you need to attack them, and that's what the Pelicans do well. Offensively and defensively for the Pelicans, you got to contain the terrifyingly good backcourt of CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. The Pelicans did a good job of this in the first matchup. Lillard did not have a good night because he was harassed all night by Jrue Holiday along with Tony Allen. He went 3 for 16 on the night for just 13 points. McCollum was a little bit better, scoring 23. And, you know, again, with a backcourt of Jrue Holiday, Rondo not being a great defender anymore, but still adequate enough, alongside Tony Allen, hopefully they can get it done again. They can limit those guys and force other guys to beat them. You know, Nurkić might be able to do it. But look, we all know about Al-Farouq Aminu. None of us particularly scared of him being an offensive threat. Neither are you really worried about Evan Turner. Let him shoot all the long mid-range shots he wants. Or Ed Davis. I think the Pelicans can live with those other guys killing him. Take away or at least slow down those two guards, and I think maybe the Pelicans can kind of eke out a win here. But certainly with this back-to-back coming up, this is a tough test and maybe a better idea to get an idea of who this Pelicans team truly is. So before I get to the interview with Alex Harari, I do want to mention there's tons of news going on around the NBA. There's injuries abound, coaches being fired. We had no coaches fired after last season. We've already had two so far this year. Shows you kind of how crazy it is. And also for Memphis, they just had a weird ownership situation come up where now their majority owner, Para, needs to either buy out other people at an exceptionally high price or step away entirely. And that's going to throw them into all sorts of disarray as well. Make sure you keep up with it all at the Locked On NBA podcast. Once a week, gets you all the info you need to know around the NBA. Get the biggest stories from all the teams with the local angle over at the Locked On NBA podcast. And joining me now on Locked On Pelicans, I've got Alex Harari, one of the writers over at LockedOnPelicans.com. Alex, thanks for taking the time to join me on here today.
Thanks for having me, Jake.
Of course, after you had badgered me and was like, when can I come on? And I was like, well, we've got a good reason to have you on here today, and that's because you've got a kick-ass article up over at LockedOnPelicans.com. I've mentioned it probably on this podcast a couple of times today. But, and it ties into something that happened last night. Jrue Holiday, in the absence of Anthony Davis and in the loss to the Timberwolves, did have a really good game. He had 27 points. He finally kind of got going, hopefully, from three, where he was 5 of 11. But you wrote about how since Rondo's come back, he's been scoring in a number of different ways and just overall kind of playing better and being that scorer that the Pelicans wanted him to be.
Yeah, he had. So it's some things that he was doing pretty well pre-Rondo, but I think Rondo has really opened up Jrue's game. He's a very good off-the-ball mover and scorer, and Rondo, if nothing else, is a great passer. I mean, he had an incredible pocket pass to Jrue Wednesday night against the Wolves, where Jrue was cutting into the lane and Rondo was able to more or less nutmeg the defender to find Jrue. So that combo works really well with how Jrue plays. I mean, as I kind of said, Jrue works in a few different ways. I mean, he's pretty decent size for a guard, but he uses his size really well. I mean, he's able to post up against most decent sized defenders. He's not going to do great against bigs, but I mean, besides Boogie and Davis, there's not too many guys in the Pels I really trust to do that. But his cutting into the basket, into the paint, has been really effective at opening up the floor for the Pels, especially with Boogie hovering around the 3-point line.
Yeah, and there's a couple. So one, what he does really well is, like you said, he uses his body and his strength, and he knows how to use it, where he can kind of get his body into a defender and use that to kind of bounce off of them and get some space. And hopefully this will lead him to getting free throws and foul calls, because certainly they need other guys than Davis and Cousins to do it. But what else have you seen from him recently, particularly with Rondo? You mentioned, you know, he's been playing well off ball. This is the way the Pelicans envisioned him. Is he doing really anything differently since Rondo's come back, or sort of maybe not differently, but adding more to it?
So I don't know if it's necessarily since Rondo's come back, but using like the NBA stats that are available on threes this year, which he's taking more of with no dribble, so spot up threes, he's shooting 37%. Last year, he only shot 31%. So I think on that side, he's playing much better into that role of being the off the ball general kind of shooting guard. One of Rondo's skills is really driving into the paint and kind of wrecking havoc from there, because he's able to pull a guard in. He's able to draw the attention of some of the bigs down low. And Jrue's been making the most of making those backdoor cuts and creating avenues for Rondo to find him in space, where Jrue's able to hit those high percentage shots right around the basket. I mean, he's taking a ton of shots within the paint. It's Davis, Boogie, and then Jrue. And I mean, Jrue's taking over five shots a game from within 5 feet, which is great on what the Pels are really looking for, since they kind of lack the outside shooters, at least in that starting lineup.
Yeah, and he's struggled with that, so they need to get him going in another way, because they do just want him to be that off-ball scorer and doing what he does. And like you said, with fewer dribbles, when he just catches and shoots, it's a little bit more instinctual. It's more in rhythm for him. And his form, I think, is probably a little bit better overall, and it's allowing to hit him more. But he started to get going shooting threes the other night against the Timberwolves, and that was really big. But you and I were talking before we started recording here. You made a really good point about this, though, about he made five threes. He missed six of them. But where did the misses come from? Like, where should he be shooting the three-point shot from?
Yeah, so his misses, and I remember one was straight on. He was pretty wide open, and he just clanked it off the back rim. But he had three shots from the right corner three, and he missed all of them, which is interesting in that that's an area which I pointed out in the article. I mean, the league itself shoots really highly from that corner. I think it's the league average is 42%. I mean, with those threes, Drew is now 1 of 9. So I think the areas where he can really hit is from the wings or from the top. I know I said he just missed that one, but that's where he gets a good view of the basket. He gets a good view of the backboard. It's also an effective spot because it's where, when he does have the ball in his hands, he can be effective as a passer. When he's off ball or when he does have the ball in the corner, it takes away from his ability to make those backdoor cuts because the defense is focused on him. So he's less effective as kind of that off-ball mover if he has the ball in the corner. So I wonder if maybe that's part of it, or if he just needs the angle and the sight at the backboard.
Yeah, and just with his ability, and, you know, he is a point guard, former point guard, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call him, you don't necessarily want to use that multifaceted player to an extent and be that corner anchor where he just sits in the corner and he's there to kind of bring a defender out of the paint and make him pay if he's left open. There's better guys on the team to fulfill that role. And this is going up on LockedOnPelicans.com tomorrow. So to get off of Drew here for a second, though, you know, who do you envision being basically that fifth starter with this team right now? Who should kind of, whoever that fifth starter is going to kind of be that anchor in the corner. Who do you think that should be currently?
So I think it's Eton. I think he's been playing really well, and I mean, he's not the sexiest pick because he doesn't put up crazy stat lines. He doesn't come off when you watch as this incredible. But for what they're looking for in that starting lineup, I think you're just looking for a bit of stability, someone who can guard the two or the three, who can make his shots when he's open. I have a feeling that a bunch of other people are writing about Darius and the fact that, I mean, Darius Miller almost made a great comeback against the Wolves himself. He had three threes in a row and then clanked the fourth barely. So I get that argument, but I think as a sixth man coming off, Darius is a bit scarier to teams where he can get a mismatch because Moore and Drew are physical guards and they can wear down the two and three on another team. I mean, Minnesota's tough because Butler and Wiggins are physical, but not many other teams have a solid 2-3 combo who can go against the Pels when the Pels decide to be physical.
That's why it was interesting when they were so insistent on keeping Dante Cunningham in that three spot, and he was playing just very, very poorly and also not giving much on the defensive end that people keep saying, well, he's good on defense. He wasn't. But most teams don't really have like a swing player, a small forward, a wing that scares you a ton. There's maybe like 10 in the league, and those guys are going to be able to score over anyone you have. So it doesn't matter if you put a guy out there with height or not. You may as well just put the best player you have on the court, regardless of if it fits in that kind of traditional role. But you're on the Etuan Moore train. I'm a little bit different because I think he's going to be more effective coming off the bench and kind of running with a second unit and being that focal point maybe with them. But it remains to be seen. So, Alex Harary, thank you very much for joining me here on Locked On Pelicans to talk about Drew Holiday. How should everyone follow you on Twitter?
So you can find me at Twitter at aharari820. It's H-A-R-A-R-I. But follow me. It's mostly
There's some soccer in there.
I try to keep the politics at a minimum. But, yeah, it's probably a decent bit of soccer, maybe less because the U.S. is in the World Cup. But, you know, with the draw tomorrow and everything, sad times.
Well, you just had to end the week. You're like the last segment on the podcast, and we just ended it on such a sad note. I think there's a big overlap of Pels fans and soccer fans too.
Yeah, and I think the Locked On group is pretty pro Spurs, like Tottenham Spurs, not.
I was like, you probably need to specify.
Yeah, for the non-soccer people out there, that there is a team in London called Tottenham. They're the Spurs. So if you see me tweeting about Spurs should be better at something, it's probably them and not that team in San Antonio.
They're usually pretty good at things and don't really need to improve on very much at all. So, Alex, thank you again for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks, Jay.
So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from, as well as leave a rating or leave a comment if you can. And don't forget to follow it on social media at Locked On Pels and give it a like over on Facebook. Just search Locked On Pelicans. We got some great stuff coming on both of those places as well. Big thanks to my guest, Alex Harari. Give him a follow. It's aharari820. H-A-R-A-R-I 820 with an A in front of that on Twitter as well. He's got some great insights during the games. And finally, where I will be tonight, don't forget the local indie rock band Vox and the Hound, the band that supplies the music and whose lead guitarist Roy Calais is also a writer for LockedOnPelicans.com. They're going to be performing over at the Hi-Ho Lounge. It's going to be a lot of fun, a great bill. I will be there. Support local music. Support the podcast. Support everything. We're happy people because it is a Friday. Support the Pelicans, most of all, I guess, would probably be the thing to say here. So as always, I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, and I'll be back with you all tomorrow. Not tomorrow. I'm going to be back with you all on Monday. There we go. I'm so used to saying that. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games.